At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Joining me, as always, is the fabulous Billboard.com senior editor, Katie Atkinson.
Hey, Keith.
How are you, Katie?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. How about yourself?
I am still getting over a cold.
You sound pretty great, though.
Or
you're coming back.
I'm coming back stronger than ever. I like my sort of dark and sultry voice.
Yes.
It's the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. It's your one-stop shop for all things gargly. The Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the week's big pop news, fun chart stats and stories, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. I don't know why I'm so energetic right now. I'm just like dancing in my seat. Well, on this week's show, we've got an interview with the wonderful singer-songwriter KT Tunstall. She dropped by the office to chat about her new album, Kin, which is out now, and how she's making the most honest music she's ever made. So stay tuned for our chat with her later on in the show. Plus, we've got chart chat about where Lady Gaga's new single, Perfect Illusion.
It's here.
Where it might debut on the Billboard Hot 100 next week. It's not an illusion. It will indeed appear on the chart. Puns! And we also have news about how there's a new top 10 on the Hot 100 this week from Charlie Puth and Selena Gomez. The Puth! Friend of the podcast, Charlie Puth. And we also have news on Travis Scott's first number one album on the Billboard 200 chart. And how Jason Aldean is set to bring country back to the top of the Billboard 200 in short order. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode. And give us a rating or review while you're at it. If you have any questions for us, feel free to tweet us at Keith_Caulfield or KT Atkinson. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. I was saying part of that as if I was like Evita Peron with my hands in the air.
I think that people really believed that. They really felt it.
Don't cry for me, podcast listeners. The truth is I will always be podcasting. Vibrato. No. Anyway. Let's talk about Lady Gaga. Gaga, rah, rah, rah. Perfect Illusion. Perfect Illusion came out last Friday, September 9th, or late in the evening, September 8th, depending on what time zone you were in.
Yes.
Katie and I have briefly talked away from the podcast about what we think of the song. We've had a couple days to digest the track. What do we think?
This had some high expectations going in.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a while. We were talking a lot last week about the return of, like, Pop Gaga after many other iterations of Gaga. And while the song is, I think, good, it's like that high bar that was set maybe wasn't met for me. There are very interesting elements of this song, including that funky key change that happens out of nowhere.
Now, people have talked about this key change. Describe to me, who is not intelligent when it comes to music, words.
Words.
Where does this happen in the song?
It's like really soonish, probably the second time that she goes through the chorus, it all of a sudden shifts into the next key up in the chorus.
Oh, when she says, it wasn't love.
And then it just, yeah, exactly.
Where she like suddenly goes up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's, you know, that's, I like when people try crazy things, and this is definitely like a little bit out of the blue. Typically when there's key changes in pop, they kind of like shift you, like ease you into it. And she just goes there.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like, I always love Gaga for pushing the envelope, and she does in this. I think one of the things that I'm not loving is the way she sings the chorus.
Yeah.
It's a little shouty, and a little like purposefully, you know, not like ugly, but I feel like it also is probably trying to convey the emotion of anger.
Yeah.
So that was probably her purpose.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily pleasant to the ears the entire time.
I like the, I like the verses, and I like the bridge. What's that?
So it sounds like the chorus is what grates on us a little bit.
The chorus is really hard, and I say this as a fan of Gaga. The chorus is just really difficult for me to get around, just because it's just, she's just so kind of shrieky. It's just that love, it wasn't love. And I get it. I think what she's trying to do is, I mean, like, the point of the song is like, she was in a relationship that was an illusion. It wasn't right. It was just this fabrication of what she thought was going to be real, and it didn't turn out. And she's like, it wasn't love, and
yeah,
she's pissed off.
Yeah.
But
it's her like theatricalness.
But it needs to also work as a pop song that you want to hear on the radio repeatedly. And what they've done to her vocal there, where they've just either amped it up or they processed it in a way where it just goes to this next level and you're like, oh my God.
You know, I'm not sure if you paid attention to the series of radio interviews that she's done about the song, but a lot of people wanted to jump to the conclusion that, you know, her breakup with Taylor Kinney, who they were engaged, like everyone wanted to think, oh, you know, this was the perfect illusion that she speaks of. And she was directly asked about it and said, this is not Taylor. This is not about Taylor. Like, don't think that it is.
Oh.
So...
Well, I guess I kind of thought it was.
Yeah,
so
exactly. I think everybody did.
Well, let's talk about where it's going to end up on the charts next week. Because the song came out last Friday, the only charts that it can really start showing up on right now are some of our Airplay charts that closed on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
So it debuts actually on our Pop Songs Airplay chart at number 31. We'll get to that in just a moment.
And how many days on the Airplay chart is that?
3 days.
3 days. So that's significant.
Friday,
to just
Friday,
hop
Sunday.
Right into the top 40.
You know.
There you go.
But in terms of the Hot 100, right now, industry forecasters suggest that it could sell maybe around 100,000 downloads.
Okay.
In its first week, which is not like Justin Timberlake size numbers of like hundreds of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And not embarrassing either.
No.
Especially because it seems to be more challenging for people to actually sell singles now.
Yeah.
That said, it's not like a slam dunk for like a top 10 debut.
Mm.
Top 40 seems likely.
And it's everywhere now. It wasn't initially like right on Spotify right away, but then it's now on Spotify. So it's streaming, and I know it's on every Spotify playlist that I pull up today, so
I'm sure that's probably by design.
Yeah.
So right now, and because we don't actually have streaming preliminary streaming data, it's a little bit difficult to forecast. It will be on the Hot 100 unless something goes terribly wrong.
Oh yeah. it will be there.
Yeah, it will be there. Top 40 probably. Could it go any higher? Probably.
Yeah.
Who
knows? A video might come out.
If there's a music video that appears before Thursday, that will really change things.
Oh, yeah.
If a music video had come out
simultaneously
to the single last Friday, we would be talking about something different.
Sure.
Like, that's really the key to get them all at the same time. Yeah. So we'll see. Tune in next week. As I said a second ago, the song debuts at number 31 on the Pop Songs Airplay chart after just 3 days of airplay. It is her 16th chart hit on the Pop Songs chart. And now it's time for our chart stat of the week.
Oh, man, you're just throwing it in wherever you feel like it these days.
I feel like it works better this way. Like,
catch you off guard.
When you're like talking about something, like I've often found in the past, like if I'm talking about a particular artist at the top of the show,
mm-hmm.
as I'm researching them, I come
you
across...
You find fun chart stats.
And I'm like, let's just put it here.
So here we are.
Here we are. So it's Quiz Katie time.
Oh, man, double whammy.
Yep, you know. You weren't prepared for this. Can you guess how many number ones Lady Gaga has had on the pop songs airplay chart?
Okay, so this is top 40 radio we're talking about here.
Yes, her bread
just
and butter.
Airplay.
Yeah.
and I know she's had, I think, well, I'm not even going to pretend to know the Hot 100 numbers, so let's just go with this. I'm going to just stab in the dark at 8.
You're very close. It's 7.
7!
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to ask you to tell you what they are. I'll just tell you. Just Dance, Poker Face, Love Game, Paparazzi, Bad Romance, Telephone, and Born This Way.
Okay. So no applause. That's surprising.
Applause went to number 4.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, I mean, basically her first, six singles all went to number 1.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
I mean, they were pretty great.
Yeah. since the pop songs chart started in 1992, she is tied with Bruno Mars and Taylor Swift, each with 7 number ones. And ahead of them on this chart are Maroon 5 and Justin Timberlake, each with 8 number ones. Pink, who has 9. And then Rihanna and Katy Perry both have 11 number ones. Of course, this chart has only been around since 1992. And that's why some artists that you may think are really big on top 40 radio aren't on this list.
Right.
Like, where's Elvis?
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit later. so there you go. There's your chart stat of the week. Just a little history about Lady Gaga on the pop songs airplay chart. All right. So back on this week's Hot 100, the Chainsmokers are still number 1 with Closer, locking up a 4th week at number 1.
Can't be stopped.
No, they are pretty much, the gap between them and number 2 is pretty significant.
That's crazy.
So they'll probably be number 1 for a minute, unless something crazy happens in the next few days. You never know. But let's talk about the Puth, Charlie Puth. Friend of the podcast, Charlie Puth.
Pop Shop Puthcast.
Pop Shop Puthcast. he gets his first top 10 single as a lead artist this week, and his second top 10 overall as We Don't Talk Anymore, featuring Selena Gomez, rises 12 to 10. Puth, of course, was previously the featured act on the massive number one hit See You Again by Wiz Khalifa.
Which just racked up 2 billion views on YouTube.
That's
only
right.
The second video to do so.
What's the other video?
The first was Psy, Gangnam Style.
Wow.
And yes, which was a mega international video, to say the very least. And yeah, See You Again is only the second one to do it.
Huh.
Yeah.
I wonder how many videos in total on YouTube have had like 2 billion views, not just music videos. I'm not putting you on the spot.
I actually think that they're the first 2 period to reach 2 billion.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, we'll cut this part out if I'm wrong.
If we're wrong. Don't quote us on that. You can Google it later. Go to YouTube and figure it out yourself. Of course, well, See You Again spent 12 weeks at number 1 on the Hot 100. As for Gomez, this is her 6th top 10 hit following Come and Get It, The Heart Wants What It Wants, say that 5 times fast, Good For You, Same Old Love, and Hands to Myself. She likes song titles with three words. Good For
You're
You,
right.
Same Old Love, Hands to Myself.
And I'm always correcting. Everyone wants to put Can't Keep My Hands to Myself when they put that song title in stories. So maybe she was like, it's got to be 3 words.
Maybe. Well, you know, I love quoting the how Billy Ocean back in the 80s, every one of his 3 number one hits all had the same number of words in their title.
Ooh, that is really fun.
And they were really long titles.
That's weird.
Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car.
Wow.
Caribbean Queen, No More Love on the Run.
Did not know that Caribbean Queen had extra words in that title.
There's a lot of parentheticals. And then There'll Be Sad Songs to Make You Cry.
Maybe he was like a numerology fan and was like, it's got to be 8.
Maybe after the first 2, he's like, we got to make the 3rd
one.
Yeah,
exactly.
actually, Fred Bronson, I remember reading the book. Fred Bronson is the former chart beat editor for Billboard back in the 90s. He's still a freelancer for us. And one of his Billboard books, I read that factoid back when I was in high school.
Mm.
So before, when I was just a little chart geek newbie. Anyway.
You loved charts and you loved words, and it just combined both of them.
Funny how that works. over on the Billboard 200 chart, Travis Scott earns his first number one album with Birds in the Trap, Sing McKnight, has nothing to do with Brian McKnight. How I wish, you know, for a moment I actually thought it was like, is he covering Brian McKnight?
But with bird sounds.
But with bird sounds.
Birds chirping by Brian McKnight.
He's covering, what was that Brian McKnight song, Every Time?
Anytime.
Anytime. That
but
was
then,
a huge hit.
I mean, his big one was Back to One.
Oh, One. Yeah. Chirp, 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 chirp.
I really wish I could chirp, make chirp, bird chirp, noises chirp, right chirp, now. Chirp. There you go. I can whistle.
Anyway. So the album debuts at number one on the Billboard 200. It earned 88,000 equivalent album units in the week ending September 8th, according to Nielsen Music. Of that sum, 53,000 were in traditional album sales. It is the fifth Apple or iTunes exclusive album to debut at number one this year on the Billboard 200, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It follows Frank Ocean's Blonde, DJ Khaled's Major Key, Drake's Views, and Future's Evol. I think all those albums are now available on other services,
okay.
But they initially, when they were number one, started off as an Apple and iTunes exclusive. So it's just the world that we live in now. Next week on the Billboard 200, Jason Aldean will probably debut at number one with his new album. They don't know.
Billboard Magazine had a great interview with Jason Aldean last week.
Really,
what did
he say?
You can find it on billboard.com. It's just a really open chat. They even talked about, I'm not sure if you know about his little scandal from like a year ago, Halloween, when he maybe dressed in blackface as Lil Wayne.
Oh, dear.
They addressed that.
So
it really goes lots of places.
I suppose if you're going to do an interview with media, you're probably going to have to answer that question.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So his album could start with 135,000 equivalent album units in the week ending September 15th, of which about 130,000 could be in pure album sales. That would actually bring a country album back to number one on the Billboard 200 for the first time since late last year when Chris Stapleton.
It's kind of crazy.
Was number one.
You think about, you know, country albums selling a ton.
Well, you know, I mean, Blake Shelton came close,
mm-hmm.
But
Florida Georgia Line last week were number two, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think some of what's you know, what is makes it difficult now is that because the Billboard 200 is the overall consumption chart now,
yes.
Makes it a little bit more
it's
challenging.
It's not just traditional album sales, which country kills in.
Yeah, yeah. Tough. Sorry. Well, now it's time for our guest interview with KT Tunstall.
Yeah.
Yeah, so her new album, Kin, came out last Friday, September 9th, and it was recorded here in Los Angeles, and KT came by the office to talk about the album and how she's more confident and comfortable in a way she's never been before. She says that she's making the most honest music she's ever made and that it was spiritually important for her to write this album basically totally on her own, and it's the first time that she's ever done that. She also talks about collaborating with James Bay on the record for a song called Two Way and says that they just had the best day ever when they recorded this song together. So here's our interview with KT Tunstall. Coming soon. Welcome, KT Tunstall, for Billboard Pop Shop Podcast.
Thank you, Billboard Pop Shop Podcast.
thanks so much for coming by.
My pleasure.
You've been interacting with our fake fireplace.
Yeah, guys, I'm telling you, the fake fireplace is like, I've never seen one quite as spectacular.
So warm
as that.
And cozy.
The reason I love it so much is because it's kind of false perspective. So the log, first of all, there's only one log in the fake fireplace, and it's basically flat.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just the coolest thing in the world.
It's a brilliant illusion.
I feel so at home.
Check out KT's Twitter and Instagram to see it for yourself.
Yes, we should revive this.
Oh yeah.
We can bring it back every so often. Maybe around the holidays.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a holiday vibe.
It's a selling point to lure people
for
Billboard.
It's an animated Christmas card for your families.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's good that we talked about the fireplace.
Thanks a lot.
But you have a brand new album called Kin.
I do.
And I'm super stoked about it because, you know, when I was listening to it, there's kind of a little bit of everything on it. There's some up-tempo dancey tracks. There's some kind of sort of swoony ballady moments. I was particularly excited about Maybe It's a Good Thing and Hard Girls, which are kind of like these
boppy dance tracks. Were you kind of like feeling like a dancey vibe when you were making those two particular songs?
It's such an interesting and meaningful record for me, this one, because the last album, Invisible Empire Crescent Moon, which I was incredibly proud of and really fond of, always will be, recorded in Tucson, Arizona, in the desert. It was kind of the start of my love affair with America and being in the desert and the landscapes of America.
Do you live in the desert?
I live in LA, which is
basically
desert,
a desert, yeah.
Fed with water from somewhere else.
True.
But that record was made, Invisible Empire was made at a time where I'd had a couple of really kind of tectonic size things shift in my life. My dad passed, I got divorced. Life was a real kind of topsy-turvy mess, basically. And the record was very cathartic, but it was a low temp. It was a folk record.
Mm-hmm.
We recorded live to tape machine. It was the first time I'd ever done that, which was beautiful. But we were also using ribbon microphones, which by their nature, they record onto ribbon and you can't shout into them. So the reason I could use them was because this was a quiet record.
A very intimate record. It had to be, yeah.
And I listened back to that and I really feel, in some ways, it was kind of funeral music. It was like the music accompanying the death of something in me. And it was, and after that record, I didn't think I was going to make another album for a long time. I moved out to LA actually to make music for movies. I was going to take a break. I just felt like I was on a bit of a hamster wheel of making these records, promoting them, releasing them. And I hadn't got that buzz from the touring from that record that I was used to. And actually, fortuitously, I did a couple of solo gigs. I toured mostly solo for that record. And I was wearing this beautiful suit and a bolo tie and we're in sit-down theatres. I'd never played sit-down theatres before. It had always been people standing. And it was beautiful and it was reverent and it was emotional. But when I did a couple of retrospective gigs after that tour had finished of my older stuff, I was like, oh, I need to be physical. I need to sweat. I need to have the feedback loop of an audience in front of me getting excited and moving and losing it. And actually, I do still like making records. But I think that process of cutting the umbilical cord to feeling like I had to do it was really liberating and ultimately was what led me to feel really excited about making a record. And I'm a different person. I've been through some really life-changing experiences in the last few years and had a great period of self-reflection, which is really difficult but really has helped me get to know myself. And I feel that this album is the phoenix out of all of that, where I am confident in a way I've never been, and I'm comfortable in a way I've never been, and I see clearly in a way that I haven't done before.
I'm avoiding the suddenly I see pun joke there, even though I just I just sort of did it.
You're allowed.
So with all that said, when you went into making the album, were you like, you know what, I'm going to shake it up and I'm going to do some, I mean, I wouldn't say there are like full on dance tracks on the album. I don't know why that's beeping, but
yeah,
we can.
It's beeping, but just enjoy it.
Just enjoy the beeping.
It's just an experimental part of this interview.
It's the fireplace that's beeping at us.
Log is beeping.
The log is beeping. Actually, we're being recorded by the government or something. Who knows? Hi, government. So when you went into making the record, did you feel like, you know, I can do something kind of up-tempo and kind of, you know, touching upon a little bit of disco, perhaps. I wouldn't say there's any disco tracks on here, but I did feel kind of a disco vibe occasionally.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad.
I mean, there are specific tracks, like Maybe It's a Good Thing. You know, I would, my notes, it's sort of like a put on your dancing shoes type track. It's the kind of song that you want to like put on and go driving and like put the top down and just like, I'm not joking.
Well, it's
like,
so funny that you say that because it was actually driving in LA was a huge part of making this record, weirdly. So the thing that really drew me back in was my film agent lived in the valley and I'm in Venice by the beach, and so I would have to drive through the canyons, and I ended up finding some hikes out there which are half an hour from my house, and it's just gorgeous. You're in the mountains and you can't see people or cars or anything, and I would drive back in the evening and It's these amazing, winding, wild canyon roads, and I'd find myself driving Mulholland and getting that superb view of LA at night, and it's so spooky. And
well, in Mulholland at night,
inspiring. I mean, yeah, you know, and I watched all my favorite David Lynch movies.
Oh my god! Okay, well, yeah.
But I was also the car is the place that I listen to the music the most. It's really the place I get to know records is when I'm driving. And I was listening to Fleetwood Mac, and I was listening to Tom Petty and Neil Young, and all
Fleetwood
of these
Mac Rumors, by the way,
of
or,
course, I mean, and all of these records that came out of that area of LA, these widescreen, huge, big choruses with great backing vocals, and they just sound like what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I was living there, and it all seeped in. And then I was listening to kind of newer, more psychedelic stuff like Devendra Banhart and Tame Impala, great UK band called Django Django.
Which I think remixed a track
of
yours.
They did, and Dave from Django Django actually came over for the first couple of weeks of the recording of the album to just help me find sounds and get a good vibe. And so it was wonderful having him as part of the
Correct, and I was actually on the right track when I was thinking, like, this sounds like something that you should play in the car with the top down. It's like, that was what you were thinking.
Yeah, there, and it's a Journey album. It's I don't mean it's by Journey. I mean it's...
Steve Perry's on the album, everyone.
It's a journeying album. Yeah, it's really weird 70s prog rock. You should buy it.
Separate Ways, Open Arms. They're all on this new album from KT Tunstall.
We love playing in different time signatures through one song. But yeah, so it was, and really, at first, I was being reluctantly pulled back into the writing process by my subconscious brain. I was like, hang on, I'm here to write for movies, and I want to score, and I want to flex other muscles creatively. And then these songs just started to come out, and Evil Eye was actually the first riff that I wrote on my pedal, loop pedal, weirdly going back to Black Horse, which is exactly how that happened, like writing the riff on the pedal first. And I was just missing playing good hard riffs and having really great rhythm and simple ideas but effective, you know. That's always the goal, really. And so once the choruses started coming out, I just couldn't really ignore it. I had to go with it. You got to respect the inspiration when it comes. And I didn't really have any choice after the first two or three songs came out. I was like, this is really good.
You're like, there's something going on here.
Yeah, there's something happening here. And I'm not really in control of it.
And you wrote, am I correct in saying that you wrote the entire album on your own, by yourself?
I did. Wow. It's the first time I've done that. I'll usually have maybe 2, 3, maybe 4 co-writes on an album. There's a couple of writers that I love writing with. I've done some stuff with Greg Kirsten in LA.
Who's wonderful.
He's fantastic. Yeah. Such a creative guy and so talented. Martin Tarefa is another collaborator of mine who I love writing with. And but this time it was really important, circumstantially and spiritually for me, for this to be pretty hermetically sealed within my world. Because I realized after the last 3 records that I was just becoming kind of more observational. I was telling stories, but not necessarily from my own viewpoint. And I realized that that was really to try and protect myself from feeling vulnerable in a world of having some success and having people questioning your lyrics and looking your way. And I guess I felt afraid of being vulnerable. And I look back and I see that these songs are becoming less personal. They're personal to me because I know what they mean.
Right.
But the lyrics themselves were becoming less direct. And so this record, I knew I had to just be completely honest and completely direct. And sometimes I think that it's one of the biggest pitfalls in writing songs is trying to make something simple sound flowery or sound interesting or sound poetic. And one of my favorite tracks, which is kind of the mission statement of the record, is "It took me so long to get here, but here I am." And that's it. That's it. It doesn't need any explanation. That's what that song is.
On the album, you have one collaboration with James Bay.
I do.
And was that, now, did he write that with you, or was that
It was such a cool experience. So I'd started writing the song, And I knew that it would work really well as a duet because it's about a relationship, about being selfish in a relationship and not seeing each other's point of view and all of that kind of
thing. The song is called Two Way, by the way.
Two Way, yeah. And I loved the song. It had a real kind of old 70s kind of classic rock vibe to it. And
the harmonies are great between the two of you.
Thank you. And I was just really thinking, like, who can I get to sing this? And I performed on Jules Holland's Hootenanny on the BBC in the UK last New Year. And James was on. And I'd read in a couple of his interviews that he was a fan of mine, which is always so flattering when someone... I mean, he's just... super talented. He's such a brilliant musician.
Super lovely, by the way.
He's a lovely, lovely guy. And so I said hi, and he was happy to meet. And he was telling me he'd been at gigs of mine that I had no idea he was there. And it was before he got big, and he knew all my music, and that we swapped numbers, and off we went. And,
wow.
And then about 3 days later, I was like, wait a minute, he would be perfect for this song, but he's in the middle of blowing up the planet right
yeah,
now.
There's that
and he
thing.
Might be a little busy. So I just mailed him. I just said, look, I've got this song and I've attached it and the demo and let me know. It was just me playing guitar. I just said, you know, let me know. I know you're super busy, so totally understand if you don't want to. And I just got this email straight back just going, yes, 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 I'm in.
Aww.
So I was over the moon and he sent me back. I said, look, why don't you try and write another section for the song and then we can... work, you know, we can get together and finish it off or something.
Right.
He sent me back this recording of him in a hotel bathroom apologizing, sorry if it sounds bad. And I just mailed him back. I was like, dude, you need to make an album in hotel bathrooms because it sounds incredible.
Did you use that vocal or did you actually properly get
we
together?
We didn't use the hotel bathroom vocal. So thankfully James was coming through LA and had a Sunday free. And we just had the best day. We just hung out for a couple of hours chatting in Highland Park in LA. And then we went over to my friend Brian's studio. Brian Bender's got a studio in... Atwater Village, and we just had an afternoon playing like kids. We just sat there, jammed the song, laughed, played, ate good food into the evening, started recording. And James can do it in one.
Yeah.
It's just, I have to say that working with him has upped my game as a singer. I learned quite a lot from him, watching him perform and how he sings, and the control of his voice and his playing is really masterful.
Well, we'll hear all of this music, I'm assuming, on the road, because your U.S. tour starts on September 14th in Washington, D.C., and then it moves over to the U.K. in October.
Yeah.
And your plane shows up through, at least right now, through November. Who knows?
Yeah.
There could be more.
Absolutely. The calendar is open.
Calendar is open and ready to be filled with
ready
dates.
For business.
Ready for business. Call up KT or her booking agent if you'd like to book her.
Call me now on 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9 to book me.
1-800-KT-TUNSTALL. At your local sports hall. It always sounds like such a cheesy question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What can we expect from the tour? Is it going to be, you know, sort of mostly the new album? I mean, obviously you're going to play, you know, the big hits that everyone loves. I mean,
weren't going to do that.
You were going to skip Suddenly I See and Black Horse and Cherry Tree.
We are going to do that. So it's very exciting to have a brand new band.
Oh, wow.
It's actually the most economical band I've ever had. It's only four of us on stage. I feel like it sounds like there's eight of us. I feel like it's a bigger sound than I've ever had. We are being quite experimental with triggering samples and a bit of technology. Using the working with Tony Hoffer was so great because he's very into old drum machines, old synthesizers.
The producer of the new album.
Sorry, the producer of the new album, Tony, who's he's the most mischievous imp and the most efficient
imp.
Yeah, the most like efficient, organized producer all in one. It's like the perfect mix. But what fun he is. And I had been mostly drawn to him through my love of Beck, Beck being my favorite artist of all time. And he'd done Midnight Vultures and Guero with Beck and had actually played in Beck's band during Odelay times. And so has that sensibility of pop versus experimental coming together and really creating something completely listenable and emotional, but also pushing the edges of things.
I think that's a way to describe the new album as
well. Yeah, thank you.
That's certainly
a huge compliment.
It feels
thank
very
you.
Fitting too for an LA album to have Beck's producer on it
exactly,
too.
Like, right?
yeah, that's perfect.
Exactly, it is perfect, and it was. You know, he'll be a friend for life. We had such a fantastic experience making the record, full of joy, which is what the record is about, and that's the experience I wanted. I think when I started making the album, I was just like, I'm not going to do this unless I really love it. Why do this?
Yeah.
I don't need to do it anymore. I can do something else. So it's got to be great.
That's freedom.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Awesome.
And it's the dream, right? It's. I mean, who wants to slog towards a dream where you feel trapped in it in the end?
Yeah.
So it was just a celebration, the whole thing. It was really a great experience.
So go check her out on tour.
Yeah.
And I want to ask just as we... As
bring
we,
your sweatbands.
Bring your sweatbands.
Because you're going to sweat.
There's going to be some aerobics involved.
Yeah, there's going to be aerobics.
Well, I mean, the album, it has its dancey moments. You know, my notes where I was saying, you know, maybe it's a good thing, and Hard Girls and Evil Eye are all very boppy and kind of like you. If you're listening with headphones at home in your chair, you'll be dancing in your chair, but you'll be like, I need to get up, I need to move, I need to do something here.
Well, so, I needed to. That was the thing. I needed to, and I guess that's where those songs came from. This way, you said, Helen, they will you marry me? But I
said no, 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 no. I said no. Last thing, and then we'll let you go. It's been, believe it or not, 10 years, just a little over 10 years since Black Horse and the Cherry Tree kind of had this out of left field crazy success for you. Thanks partly to American Idol and Catherine McPhee performing it.
Who I thanked only about a year ago. I never met her before.
Really?
I finally met her and I was like, thanks, love. You did me a solid.
You helped me buy a house.
Yeah, exactly.
How, and then Suddenly I See came, you know, probably a little, like maybe a year later. And then you were just off and running in America. What has been sort of like... I mean,
thanks to you guys, it was, you know, it was all the support of those early songs that made it all happen.
You were kind of inescapable on the radio there for a little bit.
Yeah.
What was kind of like the greatest thing to come out of that experience of having that kind of crazy pop success? Like, what was the best thing for you out of that?
It's such an interesting question, because when it happens, you think that the answer to that question is, oh my God, I'm on a tour bus, I have a band,
right.
I'm playing shows, people are coming, I don't need to print flyers at home and give them to people on the street anymore. And then it gets bigger, and then it gets bigger, and it gets bigger. And it got to the point where I think I did start to sabotage what was going on, because I didn't feel particularly comfortable with it going so big.
Yeah.
And I was looking at playing arena shows, and I didn't know how to do what I did. I played roots music and I felt like I needed to see everyone's eyes, and it felt weird. So I ended up playing kind of multiple nights instead of going to these bigger venues. And, you know, it went big. It went up to kind of 6,000 or 7,000 people. And I just don't think I was ready for it. And so I think I pulled back and I remember saying, no, I don't think that's what I should be doing. And, you know, and I kick myself a little now, because it's like, you should try anything. Because you shouldn't say that you don't like something before you've tried it. But that's the way it went. And so then I was thinking, okay, what do I get from, you know, what is the answer? What is the repercussions? What is the gift of that massive success? And of course it's fans.
Yeah.
That goes without saying. It's having people know you. And thank goodness it was for something that I still enjoy playing.
Yeah, yeah. There's that.
But now, 10 years later, I think the answer just continues to evolve. And now the answer to that question is, I thought it was that big success of that first record. And now I'm like, no, I think it's actually now, when I'm in a position where I'm completely in control of what I'm making creatively, artistically. I choose my producer. I choose where I record. I've got the ability to pay to make a record. I can pay to make a video. I can, you know, if the label doesn't like what I want to do, I'll just do it myself. And the label actually and I have a really good relationship, and there's a trust because I've delivered them music over the years that they've been, you know, happy with, and we've sold. And so I think ultimately the gift of that success has led to freedom.
Yeah.
It's led to creative freedom. And it just feels so good. And I feel like finally I'm making the most honest work that I've made, because I can just do it on my own. I'm not being prodded by anybody, not being kind of pushed in certain directions, which I never have been hugely, but you are, you mm-hmm. know. When you're first starting out, you don't have any leverage really, and you fight your way through. But also now just knowing myself, having a newfound self confidence of just going, I'm not gonna if anyone tries to make me do something, I go, why would I do that? I don't have to do it. I'll just not do it, and then we both lose. Why would we want that?
Right.
So, yeah, it's led to. A freedom that I didn't foresee, which has been such an amazing surprise.
Well, make sure to check out KT's new album, Kin. Make sure to see her on tour, because you're going to bring your sweatpants and aerobic bands and some sort of, I don't know.
I just want to make you dance, laugh, and cry all in an hour and a half.
That's all.
It's a simple request.
Yeah, that's all.
It's a simple request.
Yeah.
And thank you again so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks again, KT, for coming by the office. It was such a pleasure to hang out with her.
Such a great person, such a great musician.
And check her out on the road. She's going to be on the road here for the next couple months. And the album, I the first time I heard it, I was just like, man, this is like, you know, go play it in the car with your top down. And it's just fun. It's just a fun record.
Totally.
So go check it out. And thank you again to KT. And now we're done. The other Katie.
We already got that chart stat out of the way.
I know. It seems weird. Any parting words?
Oh, man. You know, I was actually thinking about our friend Sam Lansky over the weekend, because Kiara's gold is everywhere.
Yeah.
And he told us that would be the case back when we did our first of the year show.
Back in January.
January. Yeah. And I'm like, well, it's happening. He was right. So I feel like maybe we could give that a listen as like a way to go, Sam, way to predict the pop future.
Yeah. So let's here's Gold by Kiara.
Bye.
Bye.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.